Hello and welcome to Gilmore Ball Z, the podcast where I show my wife Dragon Ball Z, she shows me Gilmore Girls, and we both try to find some kind of common ground. I'm Grant.
And I'm Paige.
And this week we watched the season finale of season 3 of Gilmore Girls, and episode 75 of Dragon Ball Z Kai. So, why don't you start us, Paige, what happened this week on Dragon Ball Z Kai?
Yeah, so I'll go to the useless plots first. Goku and Gohan stood outside of the hyperbolic time chamber waiting for something to happen. There we go. That's that plot.
It's kind of a new version of King Kai story time, where now it's Goku and Gohan story time.
Yeah. So if you remember from last time, Cell was beating up Android 17, and Android 16 was telling Android 18 to run. I feel like this is hard on people who come from the Gilmore Girls side when I'm just throwing out numbers. 16 is good boy. 17 is bad boy, and 18 is the girl?
Yeah, basically.
Good boy was telling the girl to run while the bad boy punched the perfect boy. And look, 17 is just an idiot. This week, and a lot of these weeks, could be called 17 is an idiot. 16 has convinced 18 to run, and she's just about to, when 17 almost gets absorbed. We get to see the inside of Cell's tail. It's very gross and fleshy. I have some questions about that in a minute, but for now, he's about to suck up 17 with his appendage, and Android 16 bursts onto the stage. 18 tries to tell him not to, that this might be a suicide mission, and he basically just says, no, you're my, in less words, he says, you're my family now, and I want to defend you. Like, 16 is adorable. Like, he is willing to give his life now because 17 and 18 showed him love and respect. Except they didn't. They're a horrible family, but this is the best thing 16 has ever seen. And that's so sad, man. Anyway, 16 throws down to prevent 17 from getting absorbed. And he cites that right now, he and Cell have roughly equivalent power levels. There is a shot to defeat Cell. Obviously, not really, because we're only so far into the storyline and we need to go a lot farther. Storytelling conventions means Cell needs to become perfect before they can defeat him. But right now, 16 is trying. 16 even tries to rip off Cell's tail, something no one else has attempted up until this point and would be the logical way to defeat him, just like it was for the androids when you ripped off their hands, just like it was with the Saiyans when you ripped off their tails. Unfortunately, Cell has Namekian DNA now. He's got Piccolo's DNA. His tail can regrow pretty easily. But still, 16 tried it, and I appreciate that
effort. He at least gave it a shot.
Yeah, and 16 also showed off some of his more action figure worthy skills.
He really is just a giant action figure.
And I love him. He has ejector punches. He launches off his fists into Cell to punch him. And underneath his ejector fists are energy blasts. They're photon cannons in his arms, which is really nice because when you hide them under fists, you can't accidentally shoot off a photon blast when you don't mean to and hurt the little birdies. I want this action figure. I know that American cartoons of this era were the ones that were more written to create toys and games.
Yeah, I don't know if that was a thing with anime or not.
I don't know if it was. I know if it was for Transformers, but really, some American toy distributor must have had a field day when they watched this episode.
Yeah, I love when he grabs Cell and just, suplexes Cell into a crater and then crosses his arms so that he can break off his hands tucked under his, into his armpits and then just empties the photon blast out of his wrists into the pit.
Yeah, and these blasts are dropping Cell's energy. He is winning. This is great if 17 wasn't the walking embodiment of the Dunning-Kruger effect. 17 has an idea of how high he thinks his skill level is, and then we've got at 17's actual skill level, which is way lower.
Especially in this context.
Oh, buddy, no, just go. 16 tries to tell him to leave, and he doesn't. Again, he's like, no, if we're gonna defeat Cell, I want the final piece. And he will get the final piece, because now he's a part of Cell. Cell absorbs him almost immediately. And 17's gone. 17, or, he's absorbed. We see him, sunken placing into Cell's eyes, just falling in. And this means that Cell is also more powerful. His power level rises. 18 is not able to run away because she can't get away quick enough. Cell has absorbed 17 speed and power. And thankfully, the other thing we learned this episode is Cell cannot absorb 16. He's got no, like, he is pure android. He has no bio energy.
There's nothing organic about him.
Organic about him to absorb.
Yeah, he's like trying, it's like trying to squeeze the juice out of a toaster.
Yeah.
There's
no juice.
There's no pulp.
So at this point, Cell is much more powerful than 16. 16 is going to try anyway, but he gets shot through the head. Like a lot of mechanical things are absorbed in the upper right quadrant of Cell's, or of 16's head. And 16 isn't doing so hot. 17 is gone. 18 says, you know what? I can't run. And Cell tries to convince her, it's fine, just I'll absorb you, everything will be great. And she's like, no, I'm a self-destruct. I am going to self-destruct here and now. This is going to be the end of the thing that killed my brother. Unfortunately, she doesn't have enough time. It will take her a few seconds to power up, and with the speed Cell has now, it won't work. And so Cell tries an interesting tactic. It's a disgusting tactic, I'll be honest here. He pulls up the voice of her dead brother, saying basically, come on in, the water's great.
Yeah, like, oh, being absorbed by Cell feels awesome. You should do it too.
And 16 is the best boy. 16's a good boy. Even when he's halfway dead, he's still trying to protect his sister. Like, he's fully taken on treating 18 like his sister and says, hey, that's not your brother. And 18 is split. She doesn't know what she's doing. She doesn't know if she should believe 16. She doesn't know if she should believe the thing that's speaking with 17's voice. Until Cell makes a huge mistake. Cell does the stupidest thing he can and says, hey, if we get absorbed, we can fulfill our father's dream. 18 knows how 17 really felt about Dr. Giroux. She knows that he would never want to fulfill his father's dream. She knows that isn't her brother, that's just a thing speaking like him, and she's back on plan self-destruct, but she still doesn't have the time. At which point, Tien remembers he exists.
Yeah, Tien has been just watching this whole fight.
And he apologizes to his heterosexual life partner, Chiaotzu, and he launches off a tri-beam. He launches off his signature attack, hopefully giving 18 enough time to self-destruct. We don't know, that's where the episode ends. But it ends with Tien remembering he might be useful.
Yeah, well, he pushes Cell down into this crater with a tri-beam, and then Cell tries to come back up.
Yeah.
And Tien hits him again.
Yeah.
And just like, well, you know, I'm not as strong as you, but I've created a situation where you have to come straight at me and I can't miss, and yeah. So I can just keep pinning you down.
So what happened this week on Gilmore Girls?
Oh, a lot happened this week on Gilmore Girls.
But also not a lot happened this week on Gilmore Girls. Keep going.
I suppose not a lot. Well, yeah, okay. So this week on Gilmore Girls, it's season finale. Rory's graduating from high school. So it's all just sort of the run-up and the lead-up to this whole graduation deal. Although I'll start with a Lorelai plot, actually. So the Lorelai plot is that the owners of the inn, we'll get back to that, are evaluating the Independence Inn to see whether or not it's really something that they can salvage. Half the rooms are closed. They had to lay off a huge chunk of the staff. Business is slowed down to the point where they only have one guest. And so it really does just seem like it's just Lorelai, Suki, and Michelle running the inn for one guest.
Mm-hmm.
While the owner's son and some suits are wandering around evaluating the place. And they basically, presumably Mia, Mia's name is never said, but we know Mia's the owner. Presumably Mia has decided that she's just going to sell the place. It's not worth the effort to bring it back up. We know she was thinking about selling it anyway from when she showed up last season. It's just, you know, it's not worth the effort to renovate it at this point. And that unfortunately means that, you know, like they had to close the whole place. Which unfortunately means that Lorelai and Suki are out of a job. Well, Michelle's out of a job too, but we don't really care as much about him in this episode. and that's a problem. At the same time, Luke has checked out the Dragonfly, and it actually isn't in too bad of shape. You know, a couple things need work here and there, but he says less than 6 months, they could have it fixed up enough that they could have guests and be up to code and everything. And it'll cost some money, but he said it's not going to be a money pit. Like, this would actually be a good deal. Depending on how cheap they can get some of the work done, it might count as a steal to get all this stuff put together. Which is great, except that, as we established in an earlier episode, money's going to be tight for Lorelai right now because she didn't get any financial aid to put Rory through Yale. Because of the money that she got from Richard, that screwed things up on the FAFSA, messed up the financial aid, kind of screwed Lorelai over, and so she's going to have to foot the entire bill for Yale. And we've been keeping all this information from Rory until this episode. She finally sits down and tells Rory, hey, this is what's happening, you know, we're not going to be able to buy the inn. And that's fine, because your future comes first. And Rory isn't having any of it. But, you know, Suki's trying to get a new job. They're just going to go get new jobs, go their separate ways, carry on with their lives, maybe get an inn together later, but right now is not the right time. Rory hates this. Rory hates this. She doesn't want to do it. She doesn't want her future to cost her mom her dream, which is fair. So she does the thing that Rory sometimes does, where she tries to be the adult. And she goes behind her mom's back, and she goes to Emily and Richard. Mm-hmm. And she tells Emily and Richard, hey, here's the deal. I want to borrow the money from you to pay for Yale. My mom isn't involved in it at all. This is just between you and me. If you lend me the money, I will pay it back. Like, I'll get a part-time job during school and pay you back what I can. And then after school, once I have a job, I'll pay you back in bigger and bigger amounts as I make more and more money until I've paid back every cent. They negotiate back and forth, and Emily isn't sure about all of it at first. Emily is all on board at first, because Rory also says, like, we could also do Friday dinners again. It would just be me, because my mom isn't involved in this, but I could do that. And Emily lights up and says, oh, that would be great. We should do it. And Richard stops and negotiates with her, and they basically come to, okay, fine, we'll do this, but you're not going to start paying us back until 5 years after you graduate, because you need to focus on your education. But Friday dinners can still be on. And Rory's like, okay, great, cool, awesome, let's do it. So she tells Lorelai this just before graduation. Like, during graduation, while they're getting ready, she says, hey, put a bid in on the inn. I made this deal with Grandma and Grandpa. This is what's happening. Put a bid in on the inn. And Lorelai isn't so much angry at Rory for going behind her back, but is just more frustrated that, like, Emily knows that Lorelai is going to come along to the Friday dinners because she doesn't want to leave Rory alone.
Yeah.
And so, oh, my mother got exactly what she wanted, and she's a master manipulator.
Yeah.
And Rory correctly points out, like, okay, yeah, but all three of us get what we want in this situation. They get dinners, I get to go to school, you get to have the inn. Everybody wins in the situation. Go put in a bid on the inn before somebody takes it. So Lorelai talks to Suki, they get it done. During Rory's graduation ceremony, like, Suki steps out, makes the call, they buy the inn. Like, while everybody's lining up for graduation. Like, while everyone's walking across the stage. So Rory gives this really touching graduation speech, which, by really touching, actually it's a terrible speech.
Yes, like, we can go into that in a minute.
We can go into that later, but Rory makes a speech about how, oh, I'm thankful for my grandma and grandpa, and I'm thankful for my mom.
It's a very sweet speech.
It's just terrible.
It's just terrible.
You know, I'm thankful for my mom, and she gave me all these role models, but the real role model was her, and I'm so glad for everything that she's done for me. And Lorelai cries, and Suki cries, and Jackson cries, and Luke blubbers like an idiot. And it's great. So, like, everything's coming together for everybody. It's all going to be good. And Emily and Richard give Rory her graduation present, which is a new car. And it's, like, great. And then Emily says, you know, oh, so you're going to Europe. When will you be back? She says, oh, we'll be back on the 27th or whatever it was she said. He said, oh, great. Well, we'll see you at dinner the next Friday. And they walk off, and Lorelai's just like, nuts. That's basically it. Like, Lorelai walks Rory back through Chilton, and they have kind of, like, the season ends on this kind of nice moment of being like, hey, look, Chilton isn't so scary anymore. And Roy says, yeah, I guess it isn't. And they walk out and we get that establishing shot of Chilton, because I'm assuming we're not going to be seeing any more Chilton. There's no reason for the story to go back there. That's the bulk plot of the show. We had a couple other little mini-plots, most importantly with Luke.
Mm-hmm.
Luke tells Lorelai early on in the episode that he and Nicole are going to be going on a cruise to Alaska, and it's going to be great. And Lorelai kind of teases him, but like, oh, that's a big commitment. You know, maybe she's expecting you to propose. Ha ha, Luke's in love. Luke's ha making ha, a commitment.
You can't go on a vacation with your girlfriend without it being engagement.
Yeah, and sure. So Luke later at graduation says, like, yeah, I don't know if I'm going to go. Things are kind of weird. And Lorelai's like, oh, that's not my fault. This is like, I swear I was just teasing you. I don't want to mess with that. And Luke's like, no, I mean, it's not because you were teasing me, but it did make me think that, like, that is a big commitment. I don't know if I want to lead her on. Because he's making it clear, like, he's not sure if he wants to commit to her. And we've established part of Luke's thing is that change and commitment and stuff are difficult for him. And so Lorelai encourages him and says, like, no, Luke, please go. It'll be fun. If she reads something into it, that's her problem. If you think it'll be fun, go and have fun. And he says, okay, yeah, maybe I will. But then later we get a scene where Lorelai goes into the diner and tells Luke, like, hey, by the way, please don't get engaged. And Luke's like, why? Just please don't get engaged. And she leaves. And then Luke wakes up and realizes that was Luke's dream.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the first episode of the season, we had Lorelai having a dream about that was weirdly domestic between her and Luke. And now at the end of the season, we have Luke having a dream about Lorelai that isn't quite as straightforward, but is very obviously implying some things about how he feels about Lorelai. And so we got that little bookend going there. So that happened with Luke. There was also a short scene where Rory keeps getting phone calls and there's nobody on the other end. And at one point, she gets one right after graduation and there's still nobody answering. She says, Jess, is this you? And there's nothing. And then she finally says, okay, Jess, you know what? You handled this whole situation really, really poorly.
It's a great scene.
It's really great. It's like, tell him Rory
tell
Gilmore.
Tell him everything he did wrong.
Tell him Rory Gilmore. She gives him the whole thing. Look, you handled this really poorly. You basically ghosted on me. You didn't tell me what was wrong. You didn't tell me you were failing class. You didn't tell me you weren't graduating. You didn't tell me your dad showed up. You didn't tell me you were leaving. You just kind of left. You weren't planning on saying goodbye. And even when I did run into you, you basically didn't tell me you were leaving. I had to infer that. Like, she lets him have it. And she's like, okay, you know what? I loved you. I really did. But I gotta move on. I'm going to college. You're doing your own thing. It's just, it's not worth it anymore. I'm sorry, but goodbye. And she hangs up on him.
Well, and she, like, she lays into him, but it's still like, I understand why you did what you did. I hope the best for you.
Yeah, she still makes it clear, like, I hope you have a good life, but it needs to be away from me. I cannot deal with you.
Yeah.
And she hangs up on him. And then we cut to just some B-roll of Jess in Windward Circle, just at a phone booth. He doesn't get any dialogue. I do wonder if they paid him the extra rate.
I don't think you can do that.
And then he just kind of hangs up the phone and walks away sad-like. And that's we just got 30 seconds of Jess at the end of this.
Dean.
Yeah, Dean's still getting married. And he and Rory actually have a kind of nice scene where she gives him some wedding tips because she's helped Lorelai put together enough weddings at the inn and offers to get them a wedding present out of this registration catalog. And so it's kind of a nice moment between the two of them after they got in a fight last time. And we also do get a little bit of Paris in this episode. Paris, her nanny shows up and brings her kids. And it's clear that Paris is really close with her nanny's kids, which is so nice.
Like, and it's Paris being warm in a way we've never seen her be warm. Like, she's bragging to Rory about the kids going bowling and their bowling scores, things mm-hmm. that don't matter to academic achievement at all.
Yeah, and like she talks about how the oldest boy is getting handsome, like
Antonio Banderas.
Yeah, he's starting to look like Antonio Banderas. Yeah, she kind of fawns over them in Portuguese and talks about like, oh, Antonio Banderas. So it's actually really nice. But then at the end of after graduation, she and Rory have a moment where Rory says, like, you know, the weird thing is most of the time I hated you. And Paris says, you know, most of the time I hated you too. And we're all like, now kiss. But then they just hug. But they hug and go their separate ways. And I'm assuming that we're going to be seeing more of Paris because she mentioned Yale was on her list of schools. So I'll be shocked if she doesn't end up at Yale.
Yeah.
Just because this dynamic is there's still so much to explore between the two of them. It'd be a shame to not put them in a cage together again.
Oh, they stay in a cage. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm looking forward to that. And that's basically what happened on this week's Gilmore Girls to finish off our third season.
Yeah, no, this is an episode where I have said for a long time, and I still stand by it, with some minor tweaks, it could have been a really good series finale.
Absolutely. Really, all you would need to make this a series finale would be Lorelai and Luke kiss at the end.
Yep.
And,
which could have really easily been done.
You could very easily fit that in. Mm-hmm. Like, make that scene. Honestly, like, the dream scene at the beginning of the season was very obvious. This dream scene, it threw me. Uh-huh. Because I honestly thought that was what was happening. Because I could believe Lorelai walking in and being like, please don't get engaged, and not being able to say why. I was 100% believe they were about to kiss.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, kiss, roll credits, there, end of season. I was sure that was the direction they were gonna go.
Uh-huh.
And then, like, yeah, and then give a little more resolution to the Emily and Richard plot.
I mean, even if you don't, it's them being stuck in the same weird, you know, like, a little more would have been good, but this is a family dynamic they're going to be stuck in for a long time.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm quite okay, I don't know if I would have quite been okay with that being where we left them for the series.
Okay.
Just because I don't, we'll talk about it, but I don't like quite where Emily and Lorelai are right now. But in general, you're right, this would have been a great series finale.
We get a good moment of resolution between Paris and Rory. Mm-hmm. We get Lorelai and Suki are about ready to start a new adventure together. Rory is on good terms with Dean. And she gives herself closure with Jess, even if he's not there to give it. And she's ready to start a new adventure. Poor Lane is still going to Seventh-day Adventist College and grounded.
Grounded, yeah.
But, you know,
but she got to go to prom with Dave Rogalski.
She got to go to prom. Like, there are a lot of things where if it ended right here, I would say it would still be a better ending than the year, like, A Year in the Life gave us. And
that's not hard.
It's like the end of season 5 of Supernatural, where if you just stop here, like, there are a few things that are not quite there yet, but you're pretty good. And a lot of it is downhill from here.
Yeah, Supernatural is very, is just if you stop a couple seconds before the end of season 5, you're good.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, Supernatural, if it ended just before that last shot of Sam on the lawn at the end of season 5, perfect series.
Yep.
Would have been an amazing show, like one of the best things the CW ever put out. Just fantastic little bites, not bite size, but tight piece of television, and then it kept going. Anyway.
Not
the subject of this podcast.
So what did you think of this week?
It was a pretty good finale. Yeah. I think really you hit the nail on the head. It tied up a lot of really good stuff. We got a couple weird little throwbacks, like the town troubadour was back at the beginning of this episode, which I don't think we've seen him all season.
We haven't seen him for a while.
Yeah. I also noticed that Gypsy still exists because she was at the town meeting. But everybody got a little bit of spotlight. I think that, and we'll get into it in questions a little bit, but I think the big thing that this episode is missing that would have made it a really great finale is we had no Christopher in this episode.
Yep.
And not only is it weird for Christopher to not be at his daughter's graduation.
Neither Christopher or Sherry.
Or Sherry,
who
yeah.
Who made it clear she wanted to be a part of Rory's life before she had a kid, so maybe she cares less now that she has her own daughter, but whatever.
Yeah, like, not having them there is weird on the story level of why isn't he has daughter's graduation, but also Lorelai and Christopher's relationship has been not necessarily a core of the series because it doesn't come up all that often, but it's been so integral when it has come up.
It's a steady beat.
It's a steady beat of the show, and I do think it's very important to the show, even if it's not in the episode-to-episode dynamics, that it would be weird to not have Christopher be in the finale.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that in general, I liked the directions that this episode went. A lot of good Luke material, a lot of good Rory material, a lot of good Richard material.
And some good Paris material.
Some really good Paris material. Like, I really, really liked just about everything about this episode. My one gripe about this episode,
and this is, I'm guessing what you're going to say, it is one of the most common gripes.
Yeah, my biggest gripe about this episode is the Lorelai and Emily thing.
Oh, never mind. It's a different thing.
I don't like it. I don't like where this plot is going. It feels like it's a really big backslide for Emily as a character.
Yeah.
That, like, the scene where Rory is pitching this deal to them and she's, like, casting side eye at Richard and making these, like, she's acting with her face in a way that really, like, it's like full evil stepmother this episode for so much of the episode.
Well, and even when, like, they ask her, should we give Rory a car? And Lorelai's reasoning is, yeah, that'd be great because I'd get to see my daughter.
Yeah, like, oh, she would love that because she'd have to be going back and forth to Yale, so she'd be able to spend more time at home. So it's kind of a present for me, too. And then Emily suddenly is really unenthusiastic about it. Both of them are, but especially Emily.
Especially Emily.
And it's just like... But yeah, I guess Richard was too in that scene. Later, Richard seemed to be back to his usual kind of, boom, I don't realize what's going on under the surface, Richard self, which is why I love him. But yeah, like, Emily seems so much more petty than she, and I know Emily is capable of being petty, but this is a whole new level of petty for Emily that is really uncharacteristic.
It feels
incredibly unearned, and it feels like it's just trying to villainize Emily for no reason.
Yeah.
Like, we're just back to villainizing her for no reason, and that is frustrating to me when the show has done such a great job of making her a fully fleshed out character, and making, even when the kind of villainous things she does, showing why they matter. But this is kind of reminding me of that stretch earlier in this season where Rory and Paris were fighting. Because it has, like, I know why, because I remember in the previous episodes, but it's kind of just become Lorelai and Emily are fighting for nondescript reasons now.
And it is a thing where you can have people who are fighting who have forgotten the original reason they're fighting, but that's not especially compelling TV.
No, it's not. And I just don't think it was well handled in this episode. And I feel like Lorelai got mad at Rory for the wrong reasons, because Lorelai just jumped into, like, oh, this is so like them, they're manipulating everybody again.
Yeah.
And, again, this is the second time now where she's played that card, and I just don't believe it.
And, really, the card she should be playing is, you're my kid, I get to make decisions for the family, and then we could have had an interesting pull of... I'm your kid, but I'm 18 now.
Yeah, I'm an adult now. Yeah, exactly. Like, she should have been mad at Rory for going behind her back, and she kind of was, but it was just, it was...
And it's, like, that would more play into the themes of graduation.
Yeah, whereas, like, Lorelai and Emily both were playing very cartoony at each other this episode. Of, like, what? You did a thing? Oh, it must be my mother's fault. And just, I did not at all believe her jump to, oh, I am now mad at my mother about this. Especially because it was, oh, she manipulated you, not, why didn't she come to me about this first? She knew I wouldn't approve of this.
Yeah.
And that would have been a reasonable reason to be mad at Emily and Richard. Because all three of them are going behind Lorelai's back. But this is just, oh, she's a manipulator, when that track doesn't make any sense for this situation. It makes no sense for Lorelai to jump to that. It just kind of feels like that's, like, the writer's lazy, like, oh, she needs to get mad at Emily? Call them a manipulator.
Yep.
Like, that's just kind of the button that they push when they don't know what to write for Lorelai's dialogue.
Yeah.
So that I wasn't crazy about, but I really, really, really liked all of Rory's stuff in this episode. I'm excited to see, like, I know you've said it kind of goes downhill from here, but I am excited to see how they're going to change up the formula, even if it's not necessarily for the better. It's always exciting to see a show do a formula change.
It's interesting and fresh for a bit.
Yeah. I really like this episode. What did you think of this episode?
Oh, and actually one more thing to talk about, though. Rory's speech.
Oh, yeah. I do want to talk. Well,
you'll skip.
I'll get to Rory's speech in a second. Okay. What do you want? What were your thoughts on Dragon Ball Z?
I liked it. I think it's, like, I liked 16, like, his, 16 is the Goku we need. 16 is selfless, he's intelligent, he's quiet, he's calm, he's thoughtful, he tries to do the smartest thing in the situation, and he's willing to sacrifice himself when he needs to for the good of the people he loves. And if 17 wasn't such an idiot, 16 could have saved us all. I don't like that the plot hinges just on 17 being an idiot and it's just like, he's hot-headed, so he has no sense of self-preservation whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I believe that he's hot-headed, but you'd think after that first fight he understood what was going on. And so it's gone from hot-headed hotshot to just stupid for the plot's sake. And that's a little frustrating.
I think that, in general, you're right. One thing they did to try to mitigate it, and I don't think it entirely worked, but they tried, was when 16, like, dunked Cell into the ground and then blasted him with his robo hands. And then 18's still there, so he turns to 18 and is like, what are you doing? Run. And Adrian's like, ah, pff,
you got this.
Bitch, I don't gotta run. You just killed Cell. We're good. And then that's when Cell pops out of the ground and absorbs 17. So they did give that moment of like, okay, now it's not, I'm dumb and want to fight. It's, well, oh, cool, the fight's over.
No, they still had a line in there where 17 says, no, I want the final shot at him.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
He's still there. 17 is still stupid.
That's true. You're right. You're right. I rescind. Yeah, no, you're right. No prize for me.
Nope.
Keep going.
But I really love 16 in this episode. I really actually enjoyed Tien. I thought that the tension was real. I really loved those moments with 18 where she was trying to decide what she needed to do in this situation and how she can still have that spirit of rebellion that she and her brother really have. And so in a way, she was trying to protect herself. She was trying to stay true to her values, and she was trying to honor her brother's memory and be loyal to her family even after he's dead. And that was really compelling. 18 in that moment became a more compelling character.
Mm-hmm.
Because up until this point, she's had fashion. And she's had maybe being smarter than her brother. But here she had some stakes. She had some decisions. And she was put in a legitimately hard place and was smart enough to realize when something wasn't her brother.
Yeah, she was put in a no-win situation and still tried to make the best choice.
Well, she was put in a no-win situation and tried to make the best choice, but also still, like, what she was doing was her ultimate choice was to hold on to her sense of self. And that is incredibly important for 17 and 18. The 17 and 18, their first rebellions was going against their father, using them as a tool instead of letting them be people. But even after her brother has died, the way she wants to stay true to herself and his memory is dying before she gets absorbed.
Yeah.
And maybe sticking a middle finger out to Cell just by exploding part of him. Like,
I'd love to see that alternate take where she blows herself up and then just, like, her severed hand with the middle finger hits Cell in the face.
I really liked 18 after this episode. Like, I wanted to like her because she was a girl in a show that doesn't have many strong women. But, after this, I like her as a person. But it is frustrating that I have to get through the idiot plot. Like, I had to watch 17 hold the idiot ball to get there. I'm getting a little sick of Hyperbolic Time Chamber Watch 2019 because Vegeta should have been out of there already, and it's just to pad out the plot. I really wish they had timed it out a little better where, you know, it's 12 more hours. How are we going to wait for Vegeta? But I'm not going to get that. It's Dragon Ball time. Dragon Ball time doesn't matter. But it was overall a good episode.
Okay. So, I want to hear your thoughts on Cell's semi-perfect form.
Oh, it's so ugly. It's hideous. Whoever thought of the green-orange-purple color scheme he's got going on had another thing coming. Because it's three strong clashing colors. It looks terrible. There is nothing semi-perfect about it. His lips make me deeply uncomfortable because they definitely, once again, mirror blackface in, like, vaudeville shows. He's ugly. He sounds weird. I don't like him.
I have to admire the fact that they managed to make semi-perfect Cell creepy in a completely different way than his base form.
They did, but his base form is creepy in a really cool, compelling, unnerving, like, makes your skin crawl a little way. This is just unpleasant.
He is quite unpleasant in this form. There's a reason why he wants to get to his perfect form as soon as possible, so he can get quite handsome.
Yes. I do have a question, though.
Okay.
So, I don't understand how Cell works.
Okay.
In previous iterations of Cell, it seemed like what he does is he absorbs people's bioenergy through his skin. Maybe he stabs them with his stinger to weaken them or suck things out through the stinger. It's been a little bit unclear, but it seems like stinging people and sucking out their life energy is a thing he does. And that totally explains why people were left with empty clothes as if they were there. But for the first time, when he absorbs 17, his tail stinger's, like, needle thing opens to be a fleshy body tube. Like, it opens to be kind of like a reverse vagina uterus combo where you suck people in.
It's an external vagina.
Yeah. Well, but I mean, you know, you suck a whole person in instead of pushing a whole person out.
Yeah.
It's all fleshy and
yeah, you get that shot where it opens up and the camera actually, like, goes into it and it's got, like, the fleshy walls on the end.
It's a little bit like a grosser, you know, Incredible Journey kind of thing, or
Fantastic Voyage.
Voyage. And so at this point, it seems like what he does is he sucks up, like he has like a gross body water slide, maybe, like that he sucks people up with, or just like a pneumatic tube. I don't know. He has a fleshy body tube. And that's a completely different method for absorbing people than he's had previously. And it ups, like, why does he have two methods? What is the difference? Is it just that no one was consistent and they just decided they needed a way for 17 to believably still be alive?
I think that there's a couple things. That is one. But I think the big thing is the difference between absorbing someone's bioenergy
and absorbing and someone.
Legitimately absorbing them and taking them into his form. He needs to absorb 17 whole. And I think that the big thing is that we have kind of glossed over it, but when he swallows up 17 with his fleshy body tube, his form physically changes. He actually mutates. And he doesn't do that when he just eats the Battle Ball team, right? Like, it's a different thing. And so I think the idea is he can just steal people's energy with the phallic version of his tail. But then if he's going to interface with 17 and 18 on that deeper level that actually, like, changes his form, then it needs to go into yonic mode and eat them up.
I feel like we've been talking about genitalia way more with Cell than we have with anyone else.
Cell is definitely a very genitalia-focused villain. But yeah, so that's what I got, is just that the act of absorbing them in order to achieve his perfect form is different than just sucking up someone's energy.
Okay.
Do you have any other questions for me?
Nope, that's the main one.
That's the main one? Okay, I want to talk about Rory Gilmore's speech.
It's terrible.
It's terrible.
We will say ahead of time, as a speech for a television show where the idea is wrapping up how a character feels about the people who are important to her, adorable. I mean, you know, cute enough.
Poorly delivered, but adorable.
But adorable, sure. But as a graduation speech.
It's horrible.
So what do you know about graduation speeches, Grant?
I've given many graduation speeches.
You've given two.
I have. That is many. That's more than most people. Yeah, I gave my graduation speech at middle school and at high school. And so I'm familiar with the graduation speech. And so the thing that's amazing about this graduation speech is it manages to be bad in so many ways in such a short period of time. Because it opens with, she opens with something really generic of, like, we've made so many memories here. I forget exactly what she opens with, but it's one of those just, like, really generic, every graduation speech has it kind of things.
And that's fine.
And that's fine. But, like, okay, whatever. And then she rolls into, the first world that I live in is books, which doesn't make any sense and has nothing to do with school. At least, or it could, except then the way she rolls onto it is just, you know, oh, I have, like, sailed aboard the Pequod and ridden a train with Anna Karenina,
that her train ride went better than Anna Karenina's.
Yeah, and she lists, like, 7 or 8 examples all in a row, and it's like, no, it's called the Rule of 3, Rory Gilmore, not the Rule of 27. And she doesn't go anywhere from there. She just, like, these are some books that I read. And that's it. That's the whole point of that.
It's not like, I learned.
Yeah, I learned about, you know, and then talking about the themes of some of those books and how that was part of her. And first of all, I'm almost certain those books were not part of her Chilton education. So really way out there. But whatever. Starts going on about that. But no, she just like, here are some books that I read. Secondly, and so that just doesn't go anywhere. And then she just spends a really long time talking about her mom and her grandparents, which is adorable, but again, mean nothing to anybody else at the graduation. Now, you can make that work if you frame it of like, oh, so many people outside of school supported us too in all of these endeavors. I know that my grandparents and my mom are really important to me, and you all have people who are important to you too, and hey, parents and grandparents or what have you, pat yourselves on the back, you did something too. Like, you can spin that, but she doesn't.
No.
She doesn't. And it's just, it doesn't go.
It's like, because she's the valedictorian, she earns 2 minutes to talk about what's important to her at a class-wide ceremony.
Yeah, and so she does all of that. And I kind of can sympathize, though, because from what we've seen of Chilton, it is the worst school in America.
Indeed.
So if you're trying to put together a compelling speech about what you learned at Chilton, it was probably jack shit because all her classes were 2 minutes. So I can kind of sympathize with her, but it's weird to me that we're supposed to be, like, we've established that Rory is a smart kid, she's an articulate kid, and she's good at this kind of thing. And so it's surprising to me that that's the best the writers could come up with to put in front of her.
Mm-hmm.
And you could tell Alexis Bledel was struggling with the material, because even her read on it was a little flat of just like, oh, okay, this is what we're doing until we get to the emotional part. And I don't know. I know it's not actually a big deal, like, whatever, but I just think it's funny to me that, like, oh, it's the graduation, it's a big deal, Roy's giving a speech. Oh, hey, did anybody write the speech? No? Did you? No, I didn't. Okay, shit, we gotta write a speech. We're rolling in 10 minutes. We gotta write a speech. And they put that in front of her. Like, that's kind of how it felt. I have a couple questions. So, Mia has a son.
Apparently.
They also refer to the owners. They never say Mia's... Have they just forgotten Mia exists?
It's a weird thing. It's a weird way that they
treat it. Comes back later.
And they talk about Jason's... Like, the guy's name is Jason, I think. They talk about his mom.
Yeah.
So they talk about, like, he's obviously Mia's kid. Maybe he and Mia own it together, which would explain the owners.
Maybe.
But it still doesn't, or, you know, like, the original thought I had was maybe she sold it to new people and there was no plot about it, but that would be weird.
That would be weird when they made a big deal about it.
So it is incredibly weird that they never name names. The only explanation I have is that Mia and Jason are the owners, as a mother-son thing. But I have no explanation for why they acted like they forgot Mia's name for a week. I mean, like, do they not have, like, they forgot where they wrote it down and they couldn't find it? I don't know. That one I have no explanation for.
Okay, Dean says the ring bearer for his wedding is going to be his nephew, who is 3 years old. Does this mean Dean has older siblings that we've never heard of until now?
If we haven't heard of them until now, we are never going to hear of them again. I don't remember Dean ever having any references to older siblings.
It seems like it's just him and Clara.
It seems like that. I mean, if he did have an older sibling, it would make sense that they didn't really pop up because they were out of town. But the other explanation I have that's the thing that would make the most sense is if it's his cousin's kid.
Oh, and they just call him nephew. A nephew.
Because, I mean, like, I am the youngest of most of my cousins on one side of the family. A lot of them got married and had kids while I was still in high school. And so some of them would have probably been about 3, and it's way easier to say nephew instead of first cousin once removed.
I suppose. But then he could have just said cousin's kid.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, that was weird. I know that they paid some lip service to it, but I'm still going to go out here and say it. Where are Christopher and Sherry?
It's a weird thing.
It's like, oh, Christopher's out of town. Well, no shit, Christopher's out of town. Christopher lives out of town. His daughter is graduating.
Mm-hmm.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, Christopher should be here.
And Sherry should be
Sherry
there.
Sherry would probably come along.
Gigi should be there.
Yeah, like, I was expecting to see Christopher, at least, possibly with Sherry and a little baby.
Yeah. The baby.
Speaking of little babies, shouldn't Suki be showing by now?
Maybe. I don't know how babies work. There are those girls who, like, don't know they're pregnant until they get down to, you know, go to the bathroom and then they pop out a baby.
That's true. Do we know if it was this a script pregnancy or was this a Melissa McCarthy pregnancy?
I don't know, actually. I know that there is a pregnancy later in the show that is a Melissa McCarthy pregnancy. In some of the later seasons, there is a Melissa McCarthy pregnancy baby. But I don't know about this one.
Okay. Last question. Brad also gives a speech at Chilton's graduation. So, does that mean they do a valedictorian speech and they do volunteer speakers? Because that's weird.
Yeah, that's weird. And especially if that was the case, I feel like Paris would have tried to do it instead of just giving the Pledge of Allegiance at the salutatorian. I have no explanation for that one. The only thing I've got is they said, hey, we've got a kid who not only has done some public speaking for a living, he was on Broadway with Sondheim, let's give him a place. And probably from a meta perspective, they said, we have a guy who was legitimately in Into the Woods on Broadway.
Yeah, that was legitimately why the actor was gone for a little bit.
So if we have the chance to let him sing on our show and it'll be a funny joke, we can do that. So from a meta perspective, that's probably what it is. From an in-world perspective, maybe that's also what it is. But they don't explain it.
Okay. All right. I think those are all of my questions. Do you know who you want to swap this week?
I think I might swap 17 and Paris.
Okay.
Because I feel like 17 swapped into that situation wouldn't understand that he'd already lost valedictorian and he was salutatorian, and he would be trying to get good grades up until the speech to try to hijack the speech from Rory.
He just show up in the middle of the speech, just like, wait, I wrote this essay about why adults are lame. Give me extra credit.
And meanwhile, I feel like Paris has a fighting chance against Psell. Like, she would just, like, yell at him until he didn't even want to absorb her anymore.
That's true. She'd just, yeah, she'd yell at him about her, about his weird tail appendage.
And at that point, and how it's like Hitler somehow.
Yeah.
But at that point, he doesn't, like, it's a, like, the kidnapping of Red Chief, is that the name of the story? Where he figures he doesn't even want to absorb her anymore because he doesn't want her little voice yapping on in his head. And the world is saved by the fact that Paris can be the worst.
See, I'm going to go for a similar thing, but different tactic.
Okay.
I'm going to swap 17 and 18 with Madeline and Louise. Because they would just, they'd take a much more straightforward brute force approach. They'd just bully Sal until he cries and goes home. They're like, ew, your face is weird. What's up with that tail? That crown, that weird crown head thing is so last year. Like, oh, you want to beat Goku? Okay, blah. That's just Vegeta all over again. Get something original. And yeah, it's just, they just unleash the full force of how horrible popular high school girls can be.
Uh-huh.
And they would just bully Sal until he goes home.
Yeah. And I want to take this chance to wish a fond farewell to Madeline and Louise.
Is this the last we're going to see of them?
I don't remember for sure, but it's the last time they will be regular characters for sure.
Okay.
They might pop in to visit in college, maybe, but this is the last time either of them are major reoccurring characters on the show. They were treasured parts of our Gilmore Girls experience, and we will miss them.
Yeah, we didn't talk about them a whole lot, but no. They were always good for a laugh.
They were good for a laugh.
Their bits consistently gave me a laugh, even if they didn't make it into the synopsis when we talked about it on the mics.
Yeah.
So, goodbye, Madeline and Louise. We will miss you. Actually, another thing that I don't want to say why, because I'm glad, but where was Max Medina during the graduation ceremony?
Yeah, who knows?
They made this whole, but like, that makes the bringing him back more baffling. Weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, because like, they brought him back, they didn't do anything with it.
Uh-huh.
He left almost immediately.
Yep.
So it didn't actually accomplish anything.
No. Nope.
And then they didn't, like, I would have almost believed it to remind us who he is so that he could have a moment with Rory at graduation, because as much as I did not like him, his relationship with Rory was pretty important in the first season. It would be worth bringing back around, but then they didn't. So I'm really, really, I'm curious what kind of behind the scenes stuff was happening that they decided to bring him back for two episodes and have that plot go nowhere.
Well, this is also weird. And I know Kiri's going to give me a hard time for this, but the graduation ceremony seating made no sense. Like, there were not enough seats for everyone who was graduating to have multiple members of friends and family there. I mean, even if they just mostly had their immediate families, because, I mean, Rory did call out that she was getting extra tickets for, you know, her mom and Luke, for Richard and Emily, and for Suki and Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
That's more than average, and not Lane, apparently, but I guess she's still grounded. But Paris also has her nanny, and all of her nanny's kids come, where, you know, I would guess that a lot of kids have their parents come, and they still only have, like, maybe 50 chairs set up for the entire graduating class.
I wasn't really paying attention to how big the graduating class was.
There, it was larger than that, and there were no teachers there, so Max being there would have been weird. That's true,
there were no teachers there. I guess that, yeah, so that was weird. That was weird.
It was a weird ceremony.
It was a very weird ceremony.
It's almost like it's been a long time since Amy Sherman-Palladino had been to a graduation ceremony and didn't do any research.
Almost. So, with that, I believe that is Gilmore Ball Z. We're going to be back next week for our usual end of season recap. We're going to talk about what we liked, what we didn't like, you know, favorite characters, favorite episodes, all that good stuff. And we're going to really sit back and just evaluate how we're both feeling about it and if we have found some common ground.
Yeah, and then after that, we'll be back to our normal episodes with Season 4, Episode 1 of Gilmore Girls, and Episode 76 of Dragon Ball Z Kai.
Yeah, there's, as usual, there's not going to be a season break or anything. We just like to break it up because it's fun. And yeah, so we got some good stuff coming up with the rest of the Cell Saga. I'm sure Season 4 will have interesting things. We'll talk about that next week. But that's going to be the deal next week before we go back to our regularly scheduled programming. So, thank you all for listening. We would love to hear from you on Facebook at Gilmore Ball Z. Our email is gilmoreballz@gmail.com. Our WordPress is gilmoreballz.wordpress.com. And our Twitter is @gilmoreballz. Or you can find us on Reddit. Our subreddit is rgilmoreballz. So please, if you've liked these last three seasons, rate us on iTunes, rate us on Stitcher, Facebook, wherever it is you get your podcasts. Share us out to your friends, shout it into the streets, all that good stuff. And it should be in your feeds by now, probably has been in your feeds for a while by now. We have caught up on all of our bonus episodes, so as of this week, we are going to be reopening, well, I guess it was never technically closed, but we're going to be reopening advertising for our Gohan and Rory Book Club Fund on GoFundMe. It is a fund, if you're not aware, for Room to Read, which is a charity that provides educational opportunities for children and especially young girls in developing countries.
And with the way it works on GoFundMe, it goes directly to Room to Read. We never see the money, we just see the number go up and we're very happy.
Yeah, no, we don't and can't touch the money. This isn't like a Patreon. You're not paying for our coffees or anything. The costs of this podcast are low enough that we'd feel bad asking you all for money. But it will go to a good cause. And the more you give, the more individual rewards you might get. We'll give you shout-outs. We can read your message on the air. You can record your own next time on Gilmore Ball Z. Or you might even get to guest host an episode with us. Nobody's shelled out that much cash yet. And then as the cumulative amount of cash goes up, we will unlock new bonus episodes. So I believe right now we are funding an episode where Paige is going to subject me to the Bollywood film Pride and Prejudice with a B, which is the Bollywood version of Pride and Prejudice, but apparently has Alexis Bledel in it. So it counts. So that's what we're funding right now. You can go to our WordPress and click on the Gohan and Rory Book Club Fund tab at the top. And that'll show you where we're at right now, what we're funding, and a little more information about the fundraiser. We do also match every dollar donated, dollar for dollar, up to the first 500, at least. We'll talk about it from there if it ever hits 500. So if you're in a giving mood, please consider donating there. With that link, it's on our WordPress. We'll also link it in the show notes. And so with that, I believe that is Gilmore Ball Z. So we will see you next week for the season finale. So, what did ever happen to Dean's older sibling? How many seconds can Tien fight Cell before he gets killed? And seriously, where's Vegeta? Is he, like, pooping or something? Find out next time on the season finale of Gilmore Ball Z.